This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everyone. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Wyman and Bob is presented by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort. Hello, Dave.
How you doing, Bob?
Good, man. Where are
good
you?
Good weekend?
I don't see you on the video. Where'd you
go? I know.
Go?
Well, it got put in my spam folder, and then I couldn't open it. Now I'm trying to join it, and it says, sorry, can't do it. Stupid.
You and technology are best friends. It knows, always works out.
Yeah, it knows that I'm trying something.
There we go.
All right,
there?
We got it now.
All right, there he is. There he is in all of his glory. For those of you watching on the video stream at 710sports.com, Monday edition of the program, our buddy Michael Bumpus will join us at 3 o'clock today, and then the professor John Clayton at 4. We'll talk a lot of football because it was a big weekend of football. But, man, Dave, I was so fired up. I was so fired up just to lay on the couch and be a slob and not go anywhere, just go from game to game. The only time I got up was to get food or go to the bathroom. That was it.
That was your exercise?
Yeah, but then I dozed off a bit here and there because these games kind of stunk. There was not a lot of compelling action save the 49ers-Dallas game and to a certain extent the Raiders and the Bengals game. But outside of that, man, it was kind of hopefully tonight we'll make up for it, but kind of disappointing in terms of compelling action.
Yeah, no, you're right. I was paying pretty close attention to the Raider-Cincinnati game just because I think it's pretty remarkable what they've done there. You know, being able to overcome all the stuff that they had going on. But, Carr just continues to have, you know, put up decent numbers. And then, he didn't have a great game. But,
mistake.
But just not win.
Yeah, you know, so. I was kind of pulling for him. But I really do like watching Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. Joe Burrow is a stud. If that kid can stay healthy, he looks like he's going to be a great one. He's very composed, very calm, cool, collected for a guy that's had as little experience as he's had. He's pretty impressive.
Well, and I slid him over to my franchise quarterback group.
Oh, did weekend. He? He made the jump. He was promoted.
He made the list. He made the list. Yeah. So that's 9 out of 32. But you know, you could make a case that Dak Prescott did not have. He was just a little over 50%.
That was not a good game.
Oh, man, he threw the one touchdown he threw where he led the guy away from coverage. That was it was about a 30-yard throw. I can't remember who it was that caught it, but. I was like, wow, what an amazing throw by Dak Prescott. But then the rest of the way, and I think that was early on. But, yeah, it was really tough. I think it was Cooper. It was Amari Cooper. And, yeah, he struggled. He had a rough time. I always like watching Brady. And the Buccaneers, to me, are really a good team. They're really fun to watch. I love their linebackers. And, you know, they've got some good defensive players. I texted you guys. They ran zone blitz, and it worked.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I've decided. I mean, like, I've never just in general liked it, but, and what I'm talking about is, you know, you drop a defensive lineman, Shaq Barrett got an interception, and I think they're just doing it the right way. But that was our complaint about the Seahawks this year is that, you know, they ran that too many times. You had too many times where Benson Mayoa and, you know, Al Woods and Puna Ford are dropping back into coverage, Carlos Dunlap. And it just never worked. It never resulted in anything. No sacks or interceptions or anything. So,
Shaq Barrett
were able to do it.
Shaq Barrett dropping into coverage, a bit different than Puna Ford dropping into coverage.
Well, yeah.
Al Woods, right?
Yeah, and he does drop into coverage every once in a while, you know. So it's not like... It's totally foreign to him. You're right, but still, they were able to make that work. Arizona does a good job, and I'm really looking forward to this game tonight. To me, you know, before the weekend, I was like, yeah, the Cardinals Rams. That's going to be really interesting because, you know, the Seahawks beat the Cardinals that last game. We'll see if they're able to bounce back from that. I thought they had a chance to beat them twice this year. I mean, if that interception had stood for Sidney Jones, that takes that game in a totally different direction. So, but yeah, can Matthew Stafford win? And you know, they've got a lot of firepower on that team. But you know, the guy that stood out the most, and I got a text from Karen. You remember Karen and Nancy who come out to the
Mariners,
our Mariner gals.
Yeah.
So, but Karen was asking about Josh Allen, and you know, did people think he was, you know, bad? But he was a seventh pick in the draft from a small school, and he came out his rookie year. He kind of struggled. I think he was like 52% or something. But can you have a better game than he had?
Unless you complete every pass.
Yeah.
It was 21 of 25, five touchdowns.
It was like 82%. Yeah, five touchdowns, was 300 yards.
Yeah.
And then his legs. And he had the 16-yard or 20-yard scramble, and he just played a really good game. Considering, you know, when they played them, the Patriots, earlier in the year, on a Monday night game, the Patriots came up there and beat them and then ran for like 222 yards on their in their home. So, yeah, the Bills, I think this Bills-Chiefs game coming up is going to be really interesting. And I think the 49ers, I mean, Garoppolo is tough, but maybe they can give the Packers a run for their money. They're just such a good, well-coached football team.
I just don't trust Jimmy G, man. That interception he threw was horrific, and it was just kind of typical of what he does. And you talked about him not being able to throw on the move. He's rolling out to his right and just fires it over the guy's head. I mean, it was one of the easier completions you could probably have as an NFL-level quarterback and not even an elite quarterback, and just sailed it right into the arms of the defender. And you're going, of course, that's what he does. That's part of it. He can be very good and very efficient, but he is prone to those mistakes.
Well, if it's outside the numbers, you know, and I know Moyer has been talking about that for years, but was it Ayuk that ran the double move and was wide open.
He
just misses him horribly. Yeah. I mean, not just off a little bit, because, you know, you see sometimes those receivers will go up and make spectacular catches on not a great throw. That wasn't even close.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I feel like they're going to have to do it by doing it the way the Patriots beat the Bills earlier in the year. Go up there and, you know, run it 40, 50 times and get Deebo Samuel the ball. And how about that Elijah Mitchell kid? I mean, you ever heard of him? I mean, obviously we played him, so we know who he is, but he was like top 15 at the end of the year. I think he ran for about 800 yards. So, yeah, I don't know if they're going to have a chance with Jimmy G. And it just kind of shows how, again, they're a quarterback. I mean, that was the one team with a rough quarterback that won.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what stood out to me over the weekend. And I would say this, and we'll talk to Bump about it as well, but just for people that are like, get Russell out of here. You can improve in that position. You can go out there and just find another version or somebody who's just a caretaker or whatever. I think you saw just how crucial, and everybody knows this. This is sort of stating the obvious, but it was on display this weekend to me, Dave, is that if your quarterback A is an elite or B just is prone to those mistakes or just is flat out isn't very good, kind of doesn't matter what else is going on with the team. I mean, you saw, you know, Mac Jones, I give a bit of a break to. He's a rookie. Okay, he didn't have a great game, and they got just absolutely dominated. That wasn't even competitive. Right. So I kind of remove him from the list. But we brought up Derek Carr. Completes just over 50% of his passes, threw for over 300 yards, but in the most crucial moment, he throws into double coverage. I don't even know what he was looking at on that final play when they were trying to tie the game at the end of it. Jalen Hurts, I thought, was terrible. Played a terrible game. They were completely out of it. Ben Roethlisberger had 98 passing yards at the end of the third quarter, and they were down, I don't know, it was like 42 to 14 or something. The game was over. He's an absolute ghost of what he used to be. You look at Dak Prescott, played a bad game. I think he's one of the elite quarterbacks. He's one of the guys on your list in terms of franchise quarterbacks. He didn't play well.
No.
He didn't play. Other areas of the team played well. Jimmy G did not play well at all, I didn't think. He made a couple of plays here and there, but that interception was just atrocious. But lucky for him that, you know, Dak had an equally poor game, and the pass rush of the 49ers was impressive, even without Bosa. Even when Bosa got hurt, they were still getting pressure. So he got bailed out. But you just saw how crucial it is to have that certainty at that spot. And when you don't, you look at the results.
Yep. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Throw in, you know, the end of the year, which was kind of a playoff game, I guess, when the Colts went down and got beat by the Jaguars.
Jaguars.
And boy, you know, that Jones guy, you know, you were talking about the D-line for San Francisco. He had a sack. He was the guy that, pretty sure that was the guy that, I don't you remember this, on a Monday night game where Joey Hunt was playing center, and he just got trucked.
He trucked him on his back. Just flattened him.
I feel like he's one of those guys that is kind of like a Rasheem Green. You know, he's not the, he's not Armstead, he's not Bosa, but he gets you, you know, just a good, solid performance almost every time. But boy, Bosa's, he is really good. But yeah, you saw some injuries that happened. You know, you look at
Fred Warner.
Yeah, Warner and Bosa, and then you look over in Tampa with their offensive line. They were banged up. Yep. So, and then you saw him, the backup, come in and just get blown up. So, yeah, it's that's part of it, you know, and that's, if San Francisco doesn't have those two guys, there's no chance that they're going to be able to beat Green Bay.
Yeah, and I'd say their chances are pretty slim as it is.
Yeah,
I just don't trust him. I think he's a serviceable quarterback. I don't think he's the worst by any stretch. I don't think he's a top 10 quarterback, top 15 even, but he's just a guy he's the one you go to and say, just don't lose the game for us. Nobody's asking you to throw us the victory. Just don't lose the game for us. You can't make those kind of plays. That was just a brutal interception. Could have cost them the game. They were able to work around it. But, again, hopefully that maybe opened some eyes to Russell Wilson. I don't know. I mean, I assume if you dislike Russell Wilson, you're gonna make excuses as to why he's no better than Jimmy G or whatever. But I just, for me, that just sort of crystallized how crucial and how rare that player is, because there just aren't very many of them. They'll be anointed. They'll look at a guy and say, look at his athletic ability, look at his arm strength, look at this, look at that. But they don't put it together. They don't put it together on the field. And when it doesn't happen on the field, it's your defense can be great. You could have great receivers, great running backs, but you see single-handedly they can lose the game for you. And you saw it a couple times over the weekend. So the other thing we saw over the weekend was another story come out. Ian Rappaport wrote a story about Russell Wilson saying, according to sources, he wants to explore his options this offseason. I feel like I'm kind of numb to these stories at this point. I'm kind of like, oh, okay. You know, and I'll read it and see if there's any quotes or anything. But for the most part, I don't really take it to heart. Maybe there's truth to it. Maybe there's not. My view of this, Dave, is as long as Russ, Pete, and John are on the same page and they know the truth behind the scenes, none of this matters. None of it matters. But what I saw is just all this anger. People get so mad. Fans get so upset that these stories come out. I don't quite get the anger behind. I could see it in eye roll, like, oh boy, here we go again. But the fire that comes with you shouldn't even be considered a journalist, and how nobody takes you. I mean, just one insult after another had to come. Like, maybe he's getting info from somebody. Maybe there is truth. Maybe there's not. We'll all find out. But I don't quite get that level of anger at these, other than an eye roll, a shoulder shrug, like, eh, whatever. Okay. Right. Whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, I understand why, because, you know, Russell is one of those franchise quarterbacks that's in the, you know, top eight or nine, you know, quarter of the league. And for him to not be happy in a place where he's done nothing but win, just in general, that's a big story. And I don't know if they're just making things up or whatever. One of the things that kind of just irks me a little bit is, you know, in the Rappaport story that you sent, it says, you know, looking for other destinations, investigate other destinations.
Exploring other options, yeah.
Yeah, to see if those would put him in a better position to win another championship and create the legacy he sees for himself. Whenever somebody starts talking about their legacy, I'm like, who do you think you are, first of all? and then secondly, I mean, I feel like, I don't know, I don't remember John Elway talking about his legacy. Or, you know, I don't know if Brady has said it or not or whatever. I don't know. That just kind of, it just kind of came off as sort of the way it was worded, you know, he says, we've always thought I would be here. Who's we? I mean, I know you've got your team and everything, but You know, it's always been my goal to win multiple Super Bowls, and my plan is to be here and do that. You take every day and just enjoy the moment, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I don't know. It just came off as, you know, well, I'm just going to look around to see, you know, if there's some other place that would put me in a better position to win another championship. And I don't know, it just kind of came off like I know that teams change, you know, every year. And I always talk about the rollover. You never have the same group of guys together again. You know, there's about a third as far as the team going different places or retiring or whatever. But I don't know, it just kind of came off as not being loyal. And I'm just kind of parsing words here.
Right.
A little bit, but.
Well, I think we have that soundbite, right? Cut number two here from Russell talking about he always thought he'd be here and win multiple Super Bowls.
We've always thought I'd always be here, and that's been always my goal is to win, like I said to you guys, win multiple Super Bowls, and my plan's to be here and to do that, you know, and, you know, it's, you know, you take every day and you just enjoy the moment, man. I've learned that along the way, you know, is to. That's probably been one of my greatest gifts to myself is to know that every day I'm going to give everything I have that day, and that's it. And I've learned that too, you know, watching Coach Carroll and just his process every day and consistency of his approach. And so, you know, I'm grateful for the moments every day, you know, so that's what I know.
Well, and that sounded just perfectly fine. But, you know, the way that Rappaport puts it in the article is that, you know, he's going to investigate other designations to see if those would put him in a better position to win another championship.
I mean, who knows who he's getting that from? I mean, I'm not saying Rappaport's a liar. Maybe he does have a source. Who knows how well connected that source is or who the source is. Maybe it's his agent. I have no idea. I don't know who these guys' sources are, and they're certainly not going to divulge them. So I don't know. I guess for me, I sort of approach it the way I do broadcast teams. They're kind of in the background. I don't really notice it unless it's really extreme one way or the other. And this to me seemed like a repurposed story that we've heard over and over and over that, he's looking, he's not happy with the front office. It's everybody's, I've never heard him say anything close to that. It's all speculation. And, you know, it does gain momentum in the national voice, but as long as the guys who are involved aren't swayed by any of it goes back to what we talked about. Like, don't you picture Pete and John hearing some of these stories or reading, somebody hands them an article and they're just sitting there laughing, go, did you see this? Isn't this hilarious? Right. I kind of feel like this could be, maybe it's not, we'll find out, but I feel like this could be in that, you know, where, you know, I could just picture Russ calling Pete going, hey man, you see what Rappaport said? This is great. This is great. You know what I mean? Just chuckling behind the scenes, but I we don't know. That's just it. We don't know. I don't take it that serious. I keep an eye on it. Like, okay, well, let's see what comes of it. Maybe there's truth to it. Maybe there's not. But just the visceral, just, oh, you are a bleepity bleep and bleepity bleep you. Whoa, what? Where does that come from? I get just, again, the eye roll, like, all right, whatever. Let's see what goes on.
You're saying, like, fans on Twitter and stuff are mad at Russ.
It's either Russ or Rappaport. It's one or the other. They both get it. It's not, and that's the vocal mind. Some people are like, oh yeah, we've seen this, and some do have that attitude of like, whatever, let's see what goes on. But there are those that are super extreme, like, bleep you, Rappaport, you bleep and stink, nobody believes you, or, you know, get Russ out of here, he's Hollywood, he's prima donna, I don't want him here anymore. I'm like, my goodness, man, so extreme.
Well, and like you said, from the national perspective, they just kind of, none of it was like entirely dismissed. Nobody came out and said, that's absolutely not what's going on in Russell's camp or whatever. I don't know how many times in the off season this last year that I had people coming up saying, hey, Russ isn't leaving, is he? Is Russ going to leave? I'm like, no, he never was.
Yeah.
Why would they get rid of him? They have the contract with him. You know, if it was a contract year and things like that, that'd be one thing. But why in the world would you trade a guy like that away? And you look at his last game. He had the one interception, but threw a couple of touchdowns, and you just see what he brings. And he had a scramble where he got open to throw the ball down to, I think it was Travis Homer, and it was like a 15-yard gain. It wasn't like the biggest play in the game, but like the way he moved around the pocket and everything is just magical. And so, yeah, why in the world would you get rid of a guy like that when it's so hard to find? Yeah. Like, not even a quarter of the league can find a guy like that.
Yeah, one more before take two. I just want to play cut three because, again, the national voices out there jumping on. And I don't blame them. They're not close to the situation. They're going to talk about whatever's making news in their sport. And here's Mike Tannenbaum talking about potential destinations for Russ.
I think New York or New Orleans, and the day he walks through that building, and I've been there. I've traded for Brett Favre with the Jets. Your groundskeeper, your video director, everyone gets excited. And what did we see with Tom Brady in Tampa Bay? An aura of association. And ask Eli Manning and Tom Coughlin and Phil Sims and Bill Parcells. When you win in New York, there's nothing like it. And if he went to the Giants, the day he walks through that building, everything changes. And who knows what other players would walk to New York to play with Russell Wilson in the Big Apple.
Was it aura of anticipation? Is that what he said there? It's kind of like the illusion of complexity.
Yeah.
Or Lefkoe's term, oddly specific.
Yeah. I believe what he's saying about him walking through the door and there being a completely different mindset out there, because they know they've got a proven commodity, something they haven't had since Eli, because Danny Dimes doesn't appear to be the guy, another guy that was touted as the next thing, and now there's a lot of disappointment. So they would understand what they were getting there. I wouldn't blame them for being excited, but I don't put much into that in terms of him going to the Giants. Let's take two.
So we get one more Manning cast tonight, and the guest list has been announced. Now, in the regular season, they were doing a guest per quarter. They didn't specify that. They just said guest one, guest two, and guest three tonight. So I don't think they'll be staying on as long. But tonight, we get Larry Fitzgerald, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and Russell Wilson on the Manning cast tonight.
You think Eli Manning will try to recruit him to the Giants and say, you know, Russ, you look really good in those Giants colors out there, man. You'd be a superhero. See, I don't see Eli doing that, but maybe.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I'm excited to see The Rock.
You think he'll talk about Adam Ray?
I hope so. You should text.
I wonder if they take questions. You could submit a question to the Manning cast.
Yeah. What do you think of your buddy, Adam Ray? Yeah, that's a great list, though. I'll definitely be watching, obviously, because of Russ. But Larry Fitzgerald, too, is one of the all-time greats that kind of, you know, didn't get a lot of chances to be in the playoffs. But I think he's another one of those guys, like Bobby Wagner, that's like missed like seven games or something in his entire career.
Iron Man. Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about this a lot more and hear all about it in Sweeping the Dial. But after the Cowboys meltdown yesterday, owner Jerry Jones said that yesterday he didn't want to talk about Mike McCarthy's job status. But today his son, Stephen Jones, who's also the Cowboys executive vice president, said he's absolutely confident that Mike McCarthy will be the head coach of the Cowboys in 2022.
Yeah, That's the hard part about working for a guy like Jerry. He's just so hands-on. He's meddling. He's always in the middle of it. I think it'd be a rough position for a head coach, man. I like the way it's gone here in Seattle. I think, you know, any coach would prefer that, you know, that the owners stand back and say, you're the coach, you handle the football stuff, and I'm going to stay out of it for the most part, because he's just so vocal. He's the GM, essentially. He's the boss of everybody, and him kind of leaving he's kind of dangling him out there. Like, he wouldn't just say, no, listen, I'm disappointed beyond belief, and there's a lot to fix here, but that's our coach. He could have said that. Yeah. Instead, he's like, I'm not talking about any of this.
Right. Well, he would be so hard to work for, wouldn't he?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, we saw on Hard Knocks, you know, but I think McCarthy is a really good coach. And I didn't know this. He's one of John Schneider's best friends.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but not that means anything. But, I think back when he was his Packer days. But I think you can get it done with Mike McCarthy. You definitely can win with him. So I don't see them making any kind of move there.
All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknife prostate. Is the recency bias about to hit the Seahawks in the worst way possible? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Hey, you guys can text in throughout the show, 421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. When we were talking about how bad the games were this weekend, Dave, people were texting in going, 425 said, only watching two games past halftime. Did let me catch up on Yellowstone, at least.
Yeah, I did that myself, actually. I taped a couple of the games and fast-forwarded through. The one I was most interested in was the Niners and Cowboys.
And that ended up being the most compelling in terms of being competitive score-wise. But, yeah, it was not a great weekend just for – unless you had, you know, money on these games or you got favorite players or team, whatever. But it just – as an objective observer, it was just kind of like, ugh, I just wanted some fire, wanted some drama, and there wasn't a lot of that. But I also caught up on Succession. I know everybody's way past that show. That is such a good show. That is. Have you watched it?
I have not. We're looking for a new show here, Bob.
Oh, you should check it out, Dave. It's really good. Every character is an awful person.
Is a turd.
Is an absolute turd. Every single one of them. Yeah. But it's really well done. It can be funny at times. It's just it's a really good show. But I can't think of another. People used to say that about Seinfeld. Do you remember that? They'd say, "Yeah, none of them are really good people." You know, because they'd mock people. They were always ripping on everybody. I didn't view them kind of the same way. These are more obvious bad people. Seinfeld's a little more subtle, but these are just obvious creepy human beings. But it's really, really well done. Really good.
Remember at the end where they were all in jail and then they went on trial for all the things that they had done?
The courtroom's full of all the people throughout the series. Yeah. But it's worth your time. If you're looking for a new show, you and Shannon, I think, will really get into it.
Well, that's good. And the other thing is that if I think it sucks, I know who to blame.
That's right.
It wasn't me. It's Bob.
It's my fault. I will own it. But you'll get a couple episodes in. I think you're going to – people are texting in right now. 206, Dave, you'll love it. Another 206. Succession is the best show I've seen during COVID. Succession is the best show since Breaking Bad. So it's not just me, Dave. Our listeners are behind it as well.
Well, it's kind of interesting because if you watch Yellowstone, the character Rip is just like, you love him. He is just like who you would want to have as your, you know, that has your back, you know. And so you love the characters, but it sounds like this is kind of an interesting approach because, you know, usually that's what makes a good series is when you love the characters.
Yeah, I think you'll love aspects of these characters. There's a lot of sarcasm and a lot of foul language, but it's just you're trying to, I guess, find the best of the bad bunch or something. I don't know. They're just all every one of them is just like, yeah, you're a terrible person. You're awful.
Definitely going to have to check it out.
Yeah, it's good. Talking about the recency bias, I feel like what you and I were sort of fearful of is kind of happening, and that is what happened. You and I talked before the end of the season. I don't remember what week in the season it was, but it was what if – you know, they beat some of these weaker teams. They beat the Lions. They beat some of these teams. They end decently. Is it going to be fool's gold? Are they going to be going, hey, we're fine. Look at how we played. Look at how things ended up. We're just a couple tweaks away from being a Super Bowl team again. Nothing needs to change. And here's Pete Carroll talking about how close he feels they are to returning to championship level play.
I think it's right there. I mean, I wouldn't want to play us right now, you know, if I was another team. I think we have the elements that make you really dangerous. That you can't pinpoint where you got to stop us, you know. And defense is playing well enough, and kicking game is good enough, and when you have that foundation of the run game, then it's a tough formula. It's always been, you know, we've been playing like that for years, and so yeah, we have a ton of stuff to look forward to with this team and the players that are making up the nucleus of it, and I think it's really an exciting time for us, and I'm really pleased that we finished with a real clear illustration of who we are.
Yeah, I don't know if that's who you are, Pete, and no, your kicking game is not close to good enough. So stop that right there. But you can't start the way they've started the past couple seasons, where one side of the ball, or both sides, are in the tank, and then you dig out of this tremendous hole you dig yourself, and then somehow pat yourself on the back for, hey, see how we ended? Well, okay, well, why did you begin that way? Why did the defense begin the way it did both seasons, this season and last season? And by that, I mean horribly. They were an atrocity, especially last season. It was just a debacle, and luckily the offense was out on a record pace because they would have been a losing team last year. But then the offense went flat. Defense picked it up against maybe some subpar competition. You go back to this year, beginning of this year, defense, terrible. We had the numbers the other day. For a four-week span, weeks 2 through 5, they're giving up over 450 yards a game, over 21 points a game. Offense never got on track this year. They had more excuses. You can't do that. You can't say, well, look at how the defense is playing now. Well, why did it start out so poorly? Because it cost you games. It's a large part of the reason you're a losing team this year, to say, nah, we're fine, we're close. I don't think you are.
I agree. You and I both were on that, you know, like, and even in 2020, yes, you did turn it around, but why did it take so long? You know, and we did our, and I saw that Son of Augustifson did a nice little write-up on our show on Friday about the five biggest mysteries. And
oh, where did he write that? Where did he find that at?
Oh, 710sports.com, Bob.
710sports.com. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, check it out. Cause, and then you can add your own because, you know, we picked the Pete and Russell deal. But three of the mysteries, and I'm not sure if he put Rashad Penny in there. I think he did. But three of the mysteries were on defense. You know, one was how they utilized Jamal Adams. The other was, you know, how they used Bobby with 100% of the snaps and everything. And then the other thing was Carlos Dunlap, how they used him. So, you know, those are three big time, your best players. And it was just kind of screwy how their seasons went down. So, yeah, I was worried about this too, but we'll see. I mean, I don't think they're done yet, but as far as like if they're looking for a defensive coordinator, you know, maybe they're waiting till the season to end, you know, or maybe somebody that they're thinking about, you know, offering or whatever is still in the playoffs. I mean, that could be another reason, but I don't know. I would think if you were going to give bad news to your coaches, you would do it as soon as you possibly could. That's a courtesy thing because then you give him, you know, more chances and more opportunities to get jobs elsewhere before jobs fill up. So I got to believe that they're going ahead with, other than a couple of minor tweaks as far as position coaches go, going with the same thing.
Yeah, I don't think everything's fine. I don't think they're close to a rebuild. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I don't think you can ignore when things are that extreme in one direction or the other on one side of the ball. The way it's, especially with the defense, the way the defense started out both of the past two seasons in just horrible fashion, just terrible. And again, the offense went flat last year in the second half, never really found its rhythm before Russ got hurt. Then Russ got hurt. Then all bets are off at that point. So there were reasons, but I just don't think you can look at digging the holes you've dug and then coming out of it and saying, well, see, we're fine. See, look at what we just did in this last game. It's like, all right, well, what about the previous 16?
Well, you know, and you have an excuse on offense. Absolutely. Yeah. Russell got hurt. The end. You know, yeah. I mean, you can throw in there the coordinator as well, but on defense, it was pretty much the same thing that happened the year before.
All right, this hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up, will significant cap space give the Hawks room to address one area that will keep Russell Wilson happy? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Bob, do you like the show because you imagine them as texters and Twitter voices? Talking about Succession, where I said nobody on that show is a good person. They're all bad people. Mm-hmm. No, I don't view our texters as bad people. Our listeners are great. Some of them are fiery. Some of them sometimes aren't completely rational, but I enjoy the passion. They're with us every day.
Now, they're mean. They're mean on Fridays.
Friday. Well, they're mean throughout the week. We just collect them on Friday and unveil them. But yeah, they don't limit it to just Friday, Dave. Part of the joy of that segment is they give us material every day to unveil in mean text. But no, I don't. In Twitter, I rarely ever get any grief on Twitter. Surprisingly, I see it. I certainly read it in other responses and things like that. But yeah, usually if somebody gives me a hard time, it's on the text as opposed to Twitter. But
you know who likes to fight on Twitter?
Ray Roberts.
Big Ray Roberts.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just goes after people. And he just will challenge people. And I think he's just messing around. He's just messing with people. I don't think he You know, I always, like, every time I send a text or if I was on Twitter and I started off with email this way, I just assumed that everybody knew I was joking.
Yeah, that's tough, man. I've learned that lesson hard. That's why I always put the stupid little emoji, which I always feel kind of dumb putting a smiley face or a winky eye or something. But I'm like, too many times people don't get sarcastic. Sometimes it's hard to interpret tone over a text or an email or a tweet. So I feel like you got to go out of your way to make sure everybody's clear. I'm just kidding. This is sarcasm.
Well, and when I respond to any of the texters, it's always a joke. I don't remember the last time I got mad at somebody. But yeah, somebody was basically calling me the last time. They were basically calling me a racist because of something about driving in the snow. I was like, what? What in the world are you talking about?
That one you can't even get mad at. You just got okay.
And I think I told him, please go away or something.
Driving in the snow.
Yeah, it was somehow they connected a bunch of dots. So anyway, it was...
That's good.
But for the most part, every time I respond to somebody, I remember the one guy, I called him numbnuts, and then somebody else goes, yeah, I'm with numbnuts on this one.
I know, that was awesome.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
I thought it was funny, and of course, it's a joke, so...
Anyway. Yeah, so no, we love it, just to answer that, no, we love our listeners, love our texters, and Twitter, go nuts there as well if you want, at Wyman and Bob, at Bob Stelton on Twitter, whatever you want to do. Coming up at the top of the hour, Michael Bumpus will join us on the program. Stay tuned for that conversation. The Seahawks will have significant cap space, as we've talked about now. Pete has sort of thrown out the cautionary, hey, we've got all these free agents we need to re-sign so that money goes quickly, which he's right. Depending on how many of the, what would we say, 25? According to Spotrac, they have 25 free agents. I don't think they're bringing every one of them back. We'll see how many of them actually come back, but he's right. It will definitely, chop into that amount of money. But in terms of what they're going to spend it on, don't they have to address the trenches? Don't they have to address the line? I mean, that just, it's always fun to have a shiny new toy in terms of a wide receiver or running back, or cornerback skill. Actually, they could use a quarterback, but, but just those are the glamour spots. Those are the ones that shine and are obvious. A lot of what happens in the trenches is very subtle, but when it doesn't work, it becomes very obvious. You're not sure why it didn't work at times, but when it's just not working, it becomes very clear how that trickles down and impacts the rest of the team on that side of the ball.
Yeah. Well, and you look at and I think that's one of the hardest ones too. I mean, did anybody know who what Gabe Jackson was all about?
No. Relied on the analysts and experts that watch all these teams to sort of give an opinion on them.
Yeah, and remember Gruden saying, oh, I'll never trade him or anything like that. And so, yeah, I mean, but you don't really know with offensive line. And, really, I'll be honest, because I just don't pay that much attention to Tampa, but I didn't know they had three of the five guys on their offensive line were Pro Bowlers, they said yesterday during the broadcast, and two of them end up getting hurt. But, I mean, not every team can do it, but if you're one of those teams that we talk about that has a newly introduced Joe Burrow to the list, as far as the franchise quarterback goes, I think it's the number one priority. Protect Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like he got entirely just hammered this year. I mean, but he does typically get sacked, but a lot of that's because of him, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So. He does, a lot of it is done on his own, and that's, as we've talked about, the cost of doing business, if you will, with Russell, because more often than not, it works out. He keeps a play alive. He can extend a play, and boom, there's Tyler Lockett wide open. That's just how that's worked. But yeah,
he finds himself wide open.
He's got a habit of finding himself wide open. I retweeted a guy I talked to. He talks Seahawks and MMA and all this, Mookie Alexander on Twitter. And over the weekend, he tweeted, Seahawks fans presumably had their eyes on two centers, Corey Linsley in free agency and Creed Humphrey in the draft. Linsley made all pro second team. Humphrey got all pro votes, but missed out on second team by one vote. Hope you enjoyed the 2 months that Kyle Fuller started. He's right. He's right. Linsley was a conversation. He was a guy we talked a lot about. The thought was he was too expensive. Okay. And then you kind of see what happened. I know we propped up Ethan Posick at the end of the season saying, well, he played pretty well. Played pretty well for him. I think that spot is a definite area of need and needs to be upgraded. I like Posick on the roster. I think he gives you some depth. He can play multiple positions on that line if you need him to. But in terms of having that guy, that rock, that center that Justin Britz started to become when he was here, it's not Posick. It's certainly not Fuller. I think that you start there. You work in the middle and start working your way out.
Maybe they should try Damian Lewis at center. I mean, that was just kind of weird how he was such a solid guard his rookie year, and it's pretty hard to stand out on the negative side as an offensive lineman. But boy, especially in the San Francisco 49er game, the first one, I was like, wow, he's just not the same player. But you know, maybe he goes the route of Justin Britt, go three different positions in 3 years. But yeah, I would think that the center, if you're a quarterback like Russ, I mean, blindside obviously is important. You're a tackle out there, but your center, man, I mean, that's a pretty close connection. They're typically responsible for calling out all the fronts and the blocking and which way we're sliding and things like that. So, boy, I'll tell you what, one of the things that stood out to me this weekend was the number of stunts that got home for sacks. It just seemed like, you know, and that's still something that some guys, and some of it was very creative, like I think it was Tampa that they ran their inside guy and their end outside, and then a linebacker, you know, blitzed or twisted all the way inside. Mm-hmm. So, but you still see that there are teams where they can't pick that up. I mean, it's been going on since I played. Called a TE stunt or an ET if the end goes first and the tackle goes around. So, you know, that's still something that's very difficult for teams to get done. And so it just kind of goes hand in hand with that. Maybe these offensive linemen that we're talking about are just so rare and so hard to find that, you know, that it's, because I remember talking to Tom Cable. He was saying that he thinks that that's why he thought that you just get defensive players to convert because they're more athletic to begin with, and that the offensive line play is just so bad in college.
Yeah, that always seemed to be a pretty extreme opinion based on one person of success in J.R. Sweezy. I just didn't buy that, you know, there was nothing of value being taught at the college level as an O-lineman, and you're better off starting from scratch with a D-lineman. That didn't ring true to me, but, I mean, listen, man, he's been around that game longer than I've been watching. So,
Got a job, too, right?
I believe so, yeah. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up, our guy Michael Bumpus will join us for a breakdown of the NFL playoffs and why the Seahawks aren't as far away as we might think from being a contender. That's all coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.